I am privileged today to be able to welcome our guest speaker. Our guest speaker is Reverend Yvonne Brandenburg. She is currently retired and clergy in residence at Good Samaritan Episcopal Church. They are in Brownsburg, not too far from here. She is a non-exclusive Christian and a Buddhist apprentice. After starting at St. Mark's in Carmel and then serving there 13 years, she served churches in Indianapolis and Franklin and has also worked in pastoral training and church development. A best glimpse of Yvonne might be through some of her signature quotes that speak to her heart. If it's not about love, it's not about God. That's Bishop Michael Curry. We are just walking each other home. Ram Dass. And my favorite of the three. Out beyond the ideas of right doing and wrong doing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Rumi. I have to say, in my own personal experience, I have been blessed to sit by Yvonne as we have talked with teens who were experiencing hurt from their community based off of their sexual and gender identities. I have been blessed to see her and her husband Calvin stand as pillars of strength within the Brownsburg community for these teens, showing them that they are loved and respected, which I think sometimes is hard for teens to see exactly as who they are. I've also gotten to sit next to her as we've sung songs that I think neither of us were prepared to sing, but that's what you do when you're invited to join the song. And it has truly been a good experience for me and many of our Alliance, Hendricks County Alliance for Diversity events. It was always a blessing for me to look up and see Yvonne there in the crowd as we were doing things. I'm going to invite her up now, and then I'm going to come start the movie that we're going to, little clip that we're going to start off with her speech. So join me in welcoming her up to our pulpit.
Okay. I'm very good at point and go.
Okay. I really thank you for this opportunity and to be together again with Natalie and with Sam and to meet all of you almost already today. Maybe we'll have time to share a little bit after the service. We're going to start out with what I think you'll find is one of the best sermons you've ever seen or heard. And I don't want you to think it's from me. It's from a two-minute video. It was sent to me by a pastor friend in Florida, and he even wanted to be here today virtually because his church has been called off in the Tampa, St. Pete area. They're already having the results of the weather that they're going to have for far too long. And he thought, wouldn't that be something to join you today? So he has joined you in his heart. I want us, before we do that, though, I want to give you a word that I'd like to introduce that I believe is always the introduction of our call, and it's usually at the end of a service. At the end of a service, you know, the pastor, you're waiting for the time sometime, when the pastor says, amen. And I would like you to know what amen means to me before we start. I would like you to know that my favorite understanding of the word amen is with what has just happened. And I got goosebumps when I heard the reading, when I heard Susie's songs, when I heard you joining in, that what the amen means is, this is the foundation on which I take my next step. My next step, and the next, and that is my life. So that's what I'd like you to hold as the amen. And if I forget to say amen at the end of the service, or if halfway through you wish it were the end, you can kind of join in and say that. The two-minute sermon that I want you to see here, maybe some of you have already seen it. If you have not, if you have, you're lucky, because it's the kind of thing you need to see again and again. If you have not, take a look. Google, if you do such things, on eating Twinkies with God. Okay, Natalie. My name.
Now, where are you off to?
I'm going to find God.
Ah, I see. Well, dinner's at 6. Don't be late. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yellow broccoli.
Oh.
Gotta go.
So did you find him?
God is a woman, Mom. And she has the most beautiful smile I've ever seen.
Why are you in such a good mood?
I just ate Twinkies in the park with God. He's much younger than I expected.
I'm going to keep watching that until the time I don't get tears in the back of my eyes and goosebumps. The lines, if you heard them, and I hope you did, are so wondrous. He'd gone to the park to find God. And coming home, his mother was so surprised when she said, "Did you find him?" "Mom, God is a woman with the prettiest smile I ever saw." And then in the park, as the woman meets her friend, who wonders what has happened in her day that made her feel so joyous. And so she tells her, "I have had Twinkies in the park with God, and God's much younger than I expected." I love that because it means that inside of all of us, the identity is not exactly the name we've been given and the way the world may see us, but the identity within us all is that we are of God, that we are of God. That was the producer, author, and the writer of this is an Orthodox Jewish man, and he went to a Catholic school into the kindergarten class to find the child, happened to be a little boy, he selected to play that. Now, they tell me there's a second one on the way, and if there is, I'm going to tell Sam and Natalie, and they can tell you, and you can find it, too. It can't be something you would want to miss, I would not think. Well, I would like to have had that two-minute video in my phone all through my ministry. And the reason for that is I have had more times than I can even count during my ministry someone get a hold of me and say, "I want to have coffee with you sometime." It was oftentimes people I'd never met but had heard about me from someone or else, I guess, I don't know. And it was early Starbucks years, and I would meet with them, and that's one of the reasons Starbucks stock went up so much, because of all the coffee, the times that they would have. So the people would come one at a time, many of whom, I had never met before, and they would say with me, "I wanted to meet with you because I wanted to tell you I don't believe in God." The first time that was a surprise. A pastor can go most of your ministry and never have anyone say that. But I wasn't surprised. You see, I see the way God is used and abused in discussions. So right away, I said something that I've used every single time since. Again, maybe 100 times in those kind of encounters. "I came to tell you that I don't believe in God." And I said to him, to her, to them, I said, "Tell me about the God you don't believe in. I bet I don't believe in that God either." And it would take about 2 hours together for the person to tell me the place of their heart that had been hurt in the name of God, or the way in which the traumas of the world were played out without people noticing. That oftentimes church folks aren't there in the kinds of ways that are needed. So I wish I had had back then, you know, who would have thought at that time, a long time ago, in my pocket? And then you wouldn't have had to listen to the whole message, but here we go. Natalie asked me to come. God. And I use that as a shortcut. Now that you know, I don't necessarily mean what some people have told you God is. But as a shortcut, I say God. It's a shortcut for creator, source, presence, that which is bigger and greater than all of us together, but is living at the same time within us all. That which is in there just waiting for us to know. that the stuck places of our life, wherever they are, the stuck places personally or the stuck places as a people that we are, is just waiting there each time for us to say, but you, perfect source, wholeness, presence, are here in the midst of whatever I've gotten myself into or the world has. Now, that may not apply to you. You may have hopefully figured out the message on this beautiful sermon video already. And if you have, good, because you're already taking it out to the world, I know. But maybe, if not you, maybe somebody that knows you needs to have that lived out before them. That no matter where our stuck places are, everybody needs to know that they count, that they matter, that they are whole. So I have gotten my own stuck places. You might have a few come to your mind as well. And in those stuck places, I have had many people help me deal with, live through, find answers around, find glory within. And one of the times was when I met with the Dalai Lama. Now, before you're unduly impressed, before you're unduly impressed that I met with the Dalai Lama, I want to tell you how I met with the Dalai Lama. I was at IU. I was there for the auditorium for the Dalai Lama to speak, and I didn't know when we would see him, when he would come out, but I went to the restroom, and when I came out of the woman's restroom, who was coming out of the men's restroom but the Dalai Lama? And I met there with the Dalai Lama. Now, the Dalai Lama could tell by the look on my face that I recognized him. And so he said, a good morning to you. And I managed to muster up a good morning. I thought later, and I'm still surprised today that I didn't say, good morning, Mr. Lama, but I didn't. You see, the Dalai Lama went to IU. Maybe some of you knew that, and maybe some of you even saw him there. He went quite frequently because his older brother was a professor at IU, professor of Tibetan studies. And he also, the older brother, started the Bloomington Culture Center, particularly with a Buddhist focus. And so the Dalai Lama would go see him until a few years back when his older brother graduated to the next stage of what life is. And he doesn't come back there as often, I don't think. But that day, I went down a couple of times when he would come and listen to him speak at IU. And that I love the idea that Dalai Lama translates into ocean of wisdom. Ocean of wisdom. And that's the presence you feel when you see the Dalai Lama sitting on a rug on a chair before you. And I went early so I could be right in the middle, up close. Well, on those days, he gleaned from not only his life, but the creation of all that is good and right, and imparted really great, great knowledge to us. And he told, one of the times that I heard him, he told a story about after he'd come to the United States a few times, he was with the person who was his guide and accompanying him for the day, taking him around, and he had the opportunity to say to his friend, you know, I started noticing something when I came to the United States, and I'd like to ask you about it. I have noticed that all the people in your country, no matter who they are, they all seem to have this place within them where they feel badly about themselves, and they get stuck there. Why is that? The Dalai Lama said the man looked surprised at the question and then responded, well, don't you have something in your life that you regret, that you feel badly about, that you wish you hadn't done, or at least that you had done differently? And to that, the Dalai Lama said, oh, yes. Oh, yes, one day I was approached by an elderly monk who couldn't do a certain yoga pose because of his deteriorating condition of his age. I suggested he not try to learn that particular exercise, that he was too old for that practice. I later found out the monk that I had said that to committed suicide. He thought that he would be reincarnated into a younger body that could then do the exercise that he so much wanted to do. I unintentionally had been responsible for this man's death, for this man's suicide. The Dalai Lama's guide blurted out, "My goodness, how did you ever get over that feeling?" And the Dalai Lama said, "Oh, I didn't. I never have. It's still there. In fact, it comes to my mind every day. I realize, though, that being dragged down or held back by it would have been of no one's benefit, not mine or anybody else's. So I go forward and I do the best I can." There is an ability, he went on to say, to be pierced to the heart by a sorrow, the world's sorrow or your own, without it dragging you down and pulling you back. Let us remind ourselves of that, whatever our stuck place might be, whatever comes to our mind. It does not mean that there won't be a piercing that we feel on occasion, but especially now that you've heard the words of the Dalai Lama, let's invite ourselves to live his words, that it does of nobody's good, his or mine or anyone's, to let it drag us down or pull us back. Allow it to be there, to be named and glimpsed, and then somehow to move on. I ponder that story often, that story and the Dalai Lama's response. His response and its truth. For we all average one human being a person. It's just the way life is. And each of us have our own stories, each of us with a piercing or two that sometimes returns to our heart. And getting unstuck doesn't mean we're never going to feel that twinge or even a tough twinge like that before. What I'm really sorry about when it comes to religion, and I knew where I was coming today, what I really felt like when I realized I was coming here today, I wanted to say we are kindred spirits, you and us. We are kindred spirits because so much of what is named as faith ends up contributing to the guilt, not relieving the guilt, not readdressing it as life, not with the words the Dalai Lama has said. And why that is, well, I guess it sells, maybe. But why that is, I don't know, because the non-exclusive Christian that I am, the Jesus that I've followed since I was a baby, is a man who expects us and lived out loving and serving and including all people, no exception. And was the one who, in his walk of life, raised up people that the world looked down on because of their gender, likely even their place on the gender spectrum, likely because of the money they had and didn't have, and so forth and so on. You heard Natalie read for you the words of Bishop Curry. He was the presiding bishop for a long time in the Episcopal Church. If you don't know who he is, he's the one in London that married Prince Henry and Meghan, okay? If it's not about love, it's not about God. When I teach kids, I want them to know that, and I want them to be able to recite it back to me. And I want them to know that their whole life, they can hold that sentence up and measure what someone's telling them about religion or about God. If it's not about love, it's not about God. I believe that so much that when I teach children, I say, if you stop me in the hall after church someday, and you can tell me what Bishop Curry said, and you can tell me that you're going to hold that up and always use that as your measure, I'm going to give you a $5 Dairy Queen coupon. Ask Calvin after church how many Dairy Queen coupons he's had to buy. The world is going to teach those kids all kinds of things. But Bishop Curry and Dairy Queen are going to have a different message. We are never alone. We are never, no matter where we are, walking alone. So what do we do with our stuck places when they pop up, like the Dalai Lama's? He says that he knows that remembering them does not in any way help the person, help the hearer, or help himself. What does he do then so that place where he feels that twinge, I'm glad he admitted, I feel it every day. What do we do then with those kinds of things, whatever we think of where we've gotten stuck? And if not us, somebody we care about has gotten stuck. I want to share here a Thai Buddhist story, actually a forest monk story that I heard when we were in Thailand. A forest monk lives in the forest, you can almost tell, but they don't stay there all the time. That's where they live, it's where they sleep, it's where they eat, it's where they wake up. But every day, they go down into the villages around, and they visit the sick, and they care and tend for them, and then they come back. I wanted to tell you that the forest monk tells the story and what he does with stuck places that continue to have a twinge in his heart. He said, you expend so much energy trying to forestall, trying to hold off negative kinds of things that come to your mind. You use so much energy that you don't have as much energy as you need for all the living you can be, all the good that you is to do. So what I do, the forest monk said, when it comes to my door, when that twingy place of my heart knocks, I say, come on in. Come on in, old friend. You've been here before. And you'll come back again. Sit down with me and have a cup of tea. We can visit. Now that the tea is gone, go on your way. You'll come back, I know, and we'll see you later. We'll have a chat again. Oh, what a lesson from the forest monk, that we can live through, live with, live not necessarily around, but with the empowerment of that kind of story, to let go and expect a return. And then, what are we to be? What are we to be, and what are we to do, and how are we to live? What's that Twinkie story about, and how is it bringing us together? We have an exercise bike in our bedroom, and right behind it, I have a calligraphy saying that a friend from a church I served made for me. And it has on it one of my favorite verses in the Bible, and it happens to be from the Old Testament. It's Micah 6:8. I need it more than I need a daily romp on the bicycle, too, because we need something that's going to remind us, a song that is sung, a two-minute video that says it all, even a woman on a Sunday morning standing here. The verse, actually it's only a half verse if you look up Micah 6:8. What does God require of you but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God? That half verse is one of the most familiar in the Bible. What's going on at the time it was written is what's always going on in the Bible, and what is always going on, it seems, everywhere. Contending with one another. People have been jockeying for position and undercutting one another. They've been grappling and skirmishing and struggling with God and one other and within themselves as long as there's been the history of humankind. And God starts out by reminding people that they get themselves into stuck places and get drugged down and get pulled back, tripping over themselves. And God said, here's the deal. Here's my plan. It's actually been my plan all along. All you are to be, to do, to live, is to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with all people, no exceptions. You're not called to think less of yourself. You are a child of my creation. Know that and don't forget that and live it out. And with that also, it's true of every other human being created by God. My child, my children, says God, live that together with everybody. Live out kindness as your second nature. Live out justice as your default system. Live with humility as your true nature, not as some kind of meekness. We're not talking about boot lickingness, not about backing down, not about hiding your light. Let your light shine. Be seen. Lead. Claim you are born in God-given goodness and called to figure out together how to live that out. And then take that next step to live it forth. It sounds like a big order, doesn't it? Says God. It is. In fact, it's the whole menu when it comes to life. But live it out in your each day versions of it. It means that one hungry person feeds another hungry person, one at a time. One needing kindness, justice, and togetherness, living alongside another, each other, doing the same. It all comes down, says God, that you are of great intrinsic value, and everybody else is too. So don't be living otherwise. And definitely, don't be teaching the children otherwise. Instead, take a deep breath. Pull up life. Pull it right up next to everybody you meet. For after all, we're just called to live, sharing a Twinkie in Earth's Park together. That's why they come in pairs in a package. Us, you and me. And God. Amen.